It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, oh boy. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is 1902 UTC on November 2nd, 2021. And that means that it is Tuesday. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
No, not really. It's Tuesday. Life is good. Hello, everyone. Incom, M. Stoney, Northern Lights, Ratsu, Jeff. Hello, hello. Thank you for being here. Shout out to Tobe and Jazmez, wherever you are. If you want to hang out in Com during the show and chat and have a good time, you can always do that by SSHing over to your username at sdf.org, or if you don't have a username yet, just new, N-E-W, at sdf.org. You'll complete the sign-up process, and once you're in the terminal, once you've connected over, you can just run the Com command, C-O-M, press Enter, and that'll launch Commode Chat. You press G for go to, and then type in Anon Radio, all lowercase, all one word. And just like that, you will be part of the crew. That's right, you will become a member. Oh yeah! I don't have a good guitar riff sound. Anyway, hello F-Fog. Thank you for being here so much. So such is life. The person that was staying here, my buddy who was staying here while he was looking for an apartment, has moved on, got his apartment set up, so, oh yeah, back to just a Marcus town in my place, and that can be pretty nice. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start, and that's
world news.
That's right, it's the world news time. So, you are here. This is, sometimes people call this sad news to me, so I try and balance out the death and destruction with some less death and destruction. So, first story, Tanzanian president on Tuesday during her COP26 speech in Glasgow called on developed countries to fulfill climate finance goals of donating $100 billion by 2025 to facilitate the implementation of the Paris Agreement. The president of Tanzania criticized advanced societies for lagging behind, while developing nations like her own showed leadership in the fight against climate change. We know what is required, and we know that if the world will not act accordingly, the countries like ours, with lower adaptive capacity, have no option but to brace for more devastating impacts. Our pride, the Mount Kilimanjaro, is drastically becoming bald due to glacier melting. Our exotic and beautiful archipelago Zanzibar is struggling with temperature rises, saltwater intrusion, and inundation, thus impacting its tourism ecology. What does all this mean for a poor country like Tanzania? It means 30% of our GDP that comes from agriculture, forestry, and fisheries is not sustainable. In 2009, developed countries agrees to raise $100 billion per year by 2020 to help the developing world deal with the fallout from a warming planet. The latest available estimates from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development show that the funding hit $79.6 billion in 2019, just 2% more than the preceding year. So, really bad. Hey, I'm glad your jet lag has been fixed. Welcome, X1. This is just kind of one of those things. A lot of talks, the U.S. and other big countries, they show up and they make lots of big promises, and then they leave, and they don't do anything. And then they come back in a few years and make big promises and then leave. It's very similar to what happens in corporate world. So it's not really a huge surprise, but it does mean that, the world's not getting better anytime soon. The Taliban has a kill list for the Afghan LGBT community. Since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan at the end of August, the persecution of the country's LGBT Q+ community has ramped up, forcing many to live in hiding, fearing for their lives. We now know for sure the Taliban has a kill list, said the head of the Rainbow Railroad, a Canadian NGO helping under threat Afghans flee into exile. The situation for the LGBT community in Afghanistan has never been easy. Same-sex relations have always been taboo in the Muslim-majority country, where even under the former Western-backed government, non-heterosexual relations were illegal and could lead up to 2 years in prison. But since the Taliban came to power after the U.S. military withdrawal on August 30th, the situation has deteriorated rapidly. Although the militant group has not yet officially said how it plans to deal with acts of homosexuality, reports are increasingly suggesting Taliban's applying a strict interpretation of Sharia law under which same-sex relations may be punishable by death. This is a really scary time to be in Afghanistan, Executive Director Camille Powell of Rainbow Railroad, the only international LGBT plus organization on the ground in Afghanistan, told France 24 in a telephone interview. We know for sure the Taliban has a kill list circulating. According to Powell, the Taliban most likely profited from the power vacuum that took place in the days and weeks leading up to U.S. withdrawal. By paying close attention to the names of people that foreign rights groups were trying to evacuate. After the fall of Kabul, there was a lot of information sharing, he said, noting that the people who never made it aboard any of the flights were instead left vulnerable with their identities exposed. So, just really troubling. It's not surprising, but it is troubling, and it's good to be sure and get that out. So it's not like just a surprise to somebody. So here's something that's a little less, it's just as oppressive, but maybe a little less serious.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Syrians may be facing deportation from Turkey over banana jokes. Laughing and joking on camera, Syrians have been taking part in the latest craze to sweep social media in Turkey. In playful TikTok videos, they've been eating bananas and challenge their friends to do so. The video seems harmless enough, standard fare for TikTok these days, but while trends come and go, these videos could have lasting consequences for some Syrians. In recent days, Turkish authorities have accused Syrians of inciting hatred for eating bananas in a provocative way. Several Syrians have been arrested and faced deportation. And this isn't what you think it is. Guess why eating bananas is inciting hatred. The banana challenge was inspired by a viral video of a heated discussion between Syrians and Turks about the dire economic situation in Turkey. Turkey's economy has suffered from high inflation that's eroded living standards. In the video, conflicting views were shared, and a young Syrian woman in fluent Turkish defended the work ethic of refugees. In response, frustrated Turks suggested Syrians and Afghans were taking their jobs. Such opinions are not uncommon in Turkey, which hosts the world's largest refugee population, including 3.6 million Syrians. Anti-migrant sentiment has been rising, with a number of national Turkish politicians campaigning for harsher restrictions. But what made the video go viral was what one Turkish man said. I see Syrians in the bazaar buying kilograms of bananas. I myself cannot afford them. This claim, which caused debate among the Syrian community in Turkey, quickly turned into a viral soundbite on TikTok. Poking fun at the Turkish man, Syrians filmed themselves eating bananas, using banana filters, and sharing banana memes. While the banana jokes were only for online amusement, they did not amuse everyone. I don't know what this is. What is this? Okay. Anyway, I don't know what's going on in Com. They're talking about something, but it's not. I don't know what it is. Anyway, so yeah, that's what's going on in Turkey. Now, here's the death part. In Afghanistan, explosions and gun attack on Central Kabul Hospital killed 25 people. At least 25 people were killed and more than 50 wounded in an attack on Afghanistan's biggest military hospital in central Kabul on Tuesday, in which two heavy blasts were followed by an assault by gunmen. A Taliban spokesperson, Bilal Karimi, said the explosions took place at the entrance of the 400-bed Sardar Mohammed Daud Khan Hospital, after which gunmen opened fire. Four of the attackers were killed by Taliban security forces, and a fifth was captured. The blasts add to a list of attacks and killings since the Taliban's victory over the Western-backed government in August, undermining their claim to have restored security to Afghanistan. There's no immediate claim of responsibility, but the operation was typical of the attacks mounted by the Islamic State. It follows a string of bombings by the group, which has emerged as the biggest threat to Taliban control of Afghanistan. pretty rough, right? All right. And we got one more story here, and then we'll play a song.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Skin Them Alive. Kashmir BJP politician booked for hate speech. So a politician belonging to the right-wing BJP party, which is the same one that Mohinder Modi's in, I believe, the Bharatiya Janata Party in Indian-administered Kashmir, has been booked for hate speech after he called on his supporters to skin them alive, a reference to the region's Muslims. In a video that went viral, Vikram Randhawa, a former legislator from the disputed region's Jammu area, reportedly called for violence against the Kashmiri Muslims who cheered for the Pakistani cricket team in a match on the ongoing T20 World Cup in the UAE. The Himalayan territory of Kashmir is claimed by both India and Pakistan, who rule over parts of it. The decades-old conflict between the South Asian nuclear powers has intensified since Prime Minister Narendra Modi's BJP came to power 7 years ago. The conflict extends to sports, with cricket matches between the two nations adding to the tensions. Following India's humiliating 10-wicket loss to Pakistan on October 24th, a number of Kashmiris were attacked, and terror cases were filed against students in the disputed region. See ya, Claudio. In the BJP-ruled Uttar Pradesh state, sedition charges were filed against three students arrested in Agra City for supporting the Pakistani cricket team. So, it's bad. They have an affection for Pakistan in their blood. Agencies are active. They must have taken note of it. Whoever is involved in it, each one of them should be skinned alive, he purportedly says in the video, which hasn't been independently verified by Al Jazeera. The BJP leader asked why Kashmiris did not celebrate Pakistan's victory against the infidel New Zealand with the same fervor as they did when India lost. Sorry for the noise here. My ear itched. So, in general, not only is Urdu now hated in India by the far right, liking the wrong cricket team can get you set up with that. So, pretty rough, tough times. Alrighty, well, we got a bunch more news coming your way, but we gotta play a song because, you know, sometimes you just get tired of it.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
This guy just jumps up, and he's all about getting the music out. And so we do our best to kind of, make it happen. So let's go ahead and try and get something good in here. How am I feeling? How do I feel? We're going to play a song called Dead to Me from Agnostic Front. It's a hardcore song. I'm
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. Anon Radio is powered by SDF, and SDF is powered by you. So thank you so much for tuning in and being here today, and for being in calm if you are in calm. There's lots of news going on, but don't forget, at 1930 UTC, you've got the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, and if you press equal sign in com, you'll get all the whole schedule. You can also go to nonradio.net for that, but you'll see we've got the Dubious Goals Committee, and then at 20 hours, we've got Praise Then Darkness from our very own DJ Northern Lights, and Mondo Trash Show and Organized Insanity. And don't forget, DJ Bronzy Beat and The Resistance is going to happen at midnight UTC tonight, so definitely totally worth checking out. If you're not sure or you want to write down what I was saying, just go to anonradio.net. Totally worth it. And you can check out the archives there if you miss a show, which is another nice thing. If you miss a show, you can always listen to the recording. It's just not live. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get going. We've got about 12 minutes or so to go. And we've got plenty of news, lots of stories. We're going to flip around and do some domestic news real quick. First, LAX Airport suffered a massive power cut with officials warning of likely delays. This is about 13 hours ago this story came out. Parts of LAX Airport, hey, welcome SMJ. Parts of LAX Airport were plunged into darkness on Monday night after officials said a power bump led to outages across the international travel hub. Passengers at the scene said most parts of terminals appear to be running only on backup generators, enough to provide power to the emergency lights, but little else. A statement from the airport said the officials were assessing the outage. While many systems have come back online, there may be other impacts as crews respond and restore service. Those traveling through the airport were urged to check for delays and allow extra time. Los Angeles Department of Water and Power has reached the scene to investigate the cause of the outage. Terminal 6 of the airport was most affected, with passengers there saying the power was out for almost an hour, and alarms went off. Visuals from the terminal showed passengers sitting on the floor awaiting news on the flight delays as alarms continued to ring in the background. So, not a good day to be traveling, especially if you're going through LAX. The incident comes 3 days after another mishap at the airport when two people were injured in a stampede sparked by a false report of an active shooter. Airport operations were briefly halted, and hundreds of passengers flooded out of the airport's Terminal 1 building onto the airfield. But the authorities said it was just a rumor, and no guns were recovered. So, what a rough time. Anyway, rough time in L.A. for Airplayer and for all the logistics out of L.A. Blech. Oh, man. All right. Minneapolis votes on whether to replace the police department. Voters in Minneapolis will decide on Tuesday whether to replace their police department with a new Department of Public Safety. More than a year after the murder of George Floyd, a black man by a white police officer launched a national movement to defund or abolish police. The Democratic mayor, Jacob Frey, is also in a tough fight for a second term, facing opponents who attacked him in the wake of Floyd's death. Frey opposed the policing amendment. Two of his leading challengers, in a field of 17, Sheila Nizan and Kate Newth, strongly supported the proposal. Voters will also decide whether to replace an unusual weak mayor strong council system with a more conventional distribution of executive and legislative powers. While results on the ballot questions were expected on Tuesday night, the mayoral race uses ranked choice voting. If no candidate reaches 50% in the first round, the winner will be determined after a tally of second and potentially third choice votes. The future of policing in the city, where Floyd's death in May, they say this over and over again, the debate brought national attention as well as out-of-state money seeking to influence a contest that could shape changes in policing elsewhere. Proposed amendment to the city charter would remove language that mandates Minneapolis have a police department with a minimum number of officers based on population. It would be replaced by a new Department of Public Safety that would take a comprehensive public health approach to the delivery of functions that could include police officers if necessary to fulfill its responsibilities for public safety. So, supporters of the change argue an overhaul is necessary to stop police violence. Opponents said the ballot proposal contained no plan for how the department would operate and expressed fear it might make communities affected by gun violence more vulnerable. So, no matter what happens, the city is going to have to move forward and really wrestle with what we can't unknow, that the Minneapolis Police Department's been able to operate with impunity and has done quite a bit of harm, and the city has to take some serious steps to rectify that. So, we'll see what happens there. Fingers crossed, of course. And you may remember that nuclear submarine we talked about. U.S. nuclear submarine that ran into something, but they wouldn't say what. Well, turns out they ran into a mountain. They won't say how, but in a recent report here, the U.S. Navy revealed that the nuclear submarine that met an accident was damaged in the contested waters of South China Sea last month, hit an underwater mountain, and not a foreign vessel. The nuclear-powered submarine, the USS Connecticut, collided with an unknown object on October 2nd and suffered severe damage, leaving more than 10 sailors injured. The U.S. 7th Fleet, which operates in the Western Pacific Ocean, began an investigation to find the cause. They determined the Connecticut grounded on an uncharted seamount while operating in international waters in the Indo-Pacific region. 7th Fleet spokesperson Commander Haley Sims told USNI News, a think tank close to the Navy, on Monday. The investigation, which was completed last week, has now been passed on to the 7th Fleet Commander for review and to determine if there will be any additional accountability actions over the incident. The collision was confirmed by the Navy only a week after the fact. So, pretty interesting, but it's kind of funny because you would expect this flagship of the U.S. military, U.S. Navy, to be able to see a mountain. So it was kind of funny that they ran aground on a mountain. Speaking of bumping into things, Jesse Jackson is now in the hospital after falling and hitting his head on a university campus. The civil rights leader is 80 years old, and he was at Howard University to help students protesting against poor living conditions on campus. He was taken to a hospital in Washington on Monday. The 80-year-old civil rights leader, who ran strongly for the Democratic nomination for president in 1988, was entering a campus building when he fell and hit his head, according to a spokesman Frank Watkins. Jackson's staff took him to Howard University Hospital for tests, including a CT scan. Watkins said Jackson would be kept in overnight for observation, though test results came back normal. Family, he's resting comfortably and doing well, Santita Jackson, one of Jackson's daughters, posted on Twitter. Jackson was attending a meeting with Howard President Wayne A.I. Frederick and students who were discussing complaints about living conditions, according to Watkins. So, hope he gets well soon, but that was just a surprise, and hopefully, you know, he's a big civil rights leader in the time.
It is
time for tech news. Parallel metaverses. Facebook's name change is challenged by an Arizona retailer, Meta PCs, a computer company for gamers, says it filed the trademark name a year ago. Meta PCs, an Arizona-based company that sells computers, laptops, and softwares for gamers, was an unremarkable retail outfit a week ago. Then on Thursday, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced his company would be changing its name to Meta and found itself in an IP war with the tech's biggest behemoth. Luckily for Meta PCs, it's already a few months ahead of Facebook in having the name trademarked. According to a document shared by TMZ, the company filed for its trademark in August, a little over a year after it was started. Zach Shutt, one of the founders of Meta PCs, told The Guardian that the company was registered in November of last year, and their team was unaware about Facebook's plan to use Meta in any part of its rebranding until last week. Shutt, along with co-founder Joe Darger, told TMZ they won't sell the name for less than $20 million if Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg tries to get the name. Shutt declined to further comment on this to The Guardian, citing legal concerns. Meta ARPA is now known as ARPAface. All right, thanks SMJ. That is now a new. That is now the new name. If you'd like, please sign up for an ARPAface account. With that, you get lots of cool access. It's just you go to the ARPA array. Anyway, gotta stop. This is going to be an interesting showdown, being the United States and the way the laws work. Facebook will probably just pay lawyers, you know, $100 million instead of paying this little guy $20 million. Yahoo is the latest tech firm to quit China due to challenging environment. U.S. internet services company Yahoo said on Tuesday it has pulled out of mainland China, becoming the latest tech firm to withdraw as a crackdown by Beijing on the industry gathers pace. move comes just days after American gaming giant Epic said it will shut its popular game Fortnite, following the imposition of strict curbs on the world's biggest gaming market. Beijing has embarked on a wide-ranging regulatory clampdown on a number of industries in a drive to tighten its control of the economy, with tech firms taking the brunt. So, that's going on there in China. We are running out of time, so we'll speed this up. Addis Ababa asks residents to prepare to defend Ethiopian capital. You'll remember he's asked citizens, regular citizens, to get their arms, you know, get weapons and join the fight. Well, authorities in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, have told residents to prepare to defend their neighborhoods after Tigrayan forces, who've been fighting the central government for a year, indicated they might advance on the city. State media reported on Tuesday that city officials had outlined new measures for the capital's 5 million residents, including that all firearms be registered within 2 days and preparations made to secure it. All residents must be organized by blocks and neighborhoods to protect peace and security in their home area in coordination with security forces, who will coordinate activities with community police and law enforcers, said Kenya Yadeda, chief of the city's Peace and Security Administration Bureau. Can you imagine how interesting or wild that would be if you just got a call and it was like anyone, they're just going door to door, hey, if you've got a gun, you got to register it because you're going to have to help us fight this rebel insurgency. Pretty wild. Not super surprising, but another kind of okay. Gunmen have abducted members of staff and their children at a university in Nigeria in a rare kidnapping at a large institution in the capital of Abuja. 6 people were abducted from the staff quarters of the University of Abuja on Tuesday, according to officials. So, another abduction there. And Boris Johnson's apologized to a minister over wheelchair access. Boris Johnson apologized to Israeli minister who was unable to access COP26 in her wheelchair. Karin El-Harar was forced to return to her hotel 50 miles away on Monday after waiting outside for 2 hours. The UK Prime Minister told her he was sorry for the confusion when the energy minister joined a meeting with him and Israel's PM. Mr. Bennett thanked his British counterpart for his quick intervention on this unfortunate incident. He called it a learning opportunity for all of us and the importance of accessibility for all. So, there's a whole lot more to that, but we're out of time. Thanks so much.